Hi, folks. Bob Main here with another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. This is episode number 334, I believe. I am in the mobile studio, headed out to an appointment, but wanted to talk to you guys here about a couple of different subjects this week. I want to sort of do a little bit of a holster review to begin. The main topic, I'm going to talk a little bit about manual of arms. But I figured I would kind of throw some information out there about stuff that I've been using, testing, and so forth. I like to review products from time to time, but I like to stick with products that I use or that I've had some experience with. So I want to first of all tell you the website is handgunworld.com. That's handgunworld.com. Some of you have asked how you can listen to some of my older shows. I've been getting a lot of emails lately about older shows. Only a certain amount of shows are going to be available on iTunes. I think it's only about 125 of my episodes are available on iTunes. The rest of them you have to go to my website, handgunworld.com. That's handgunworld.com. You can listen to any of my episodes directly from my website. And you can even download them and save them like in your music folder or something like that on your smartphone or on your iPad. They won't be in the same iTunes or podcast feed, whatever podcast listener that you use, but you can do that off of the website at handgunworld.com. And you can find me on Facebook, facebook.com/handgunworldpodcast. That's facebook.com/handgunworldpodcast. And handgunworld on Twitter. Okay, in the past I have talked about the Cobra outside the waistband concealment holster from Concealment Solutions. And I have got to say now, it's been a couple of months that I've been using Jason's outside the waistband Cobra. That's the name of it, Cobra holsters. It is awesome. It's pretty much my primary mode of carry now. You know, I've always wanted to carry outside the waistband because I can carry a bigger pistol more comfortably. And I just never really found a holster that I like. And let me tell you why I like this holster. In full disclosure, Jason and Concealment Solutions, they are not a sponsor of this show. And he doesn't send me a ton of free stuff for talking about him either. I have received some free holsters, I'll say that. But most of the holsters I buy at a discount. And he wanted me to tell you that you can get a discount just for listening to my show. Just use the coupon code HandgunWorld. Real simple. All one word, HandgunWorld, and you get 10% off. So anything you want to buy from Concealment Solutions, HandgunWorld, 10% off. So anyway, again, he's not, you know, sending me freebies all the time. I just like his product. I do. So right now, today I'm carrying my Shield in a Cobra holster. Yesterday I was carrying my full-size M&P 9 in a Cobra holster. I often carry my Glock 19 in a full-size in a Cobra outside the waistband holster. It's all Kydex. And what I like is it's got quick detachment clips. So you can take this holster on and off real quick without undoing your belt. And that is one thing I really, really like. And it really pulls the pistol tight in close to the body. And he makes the clips for either inch and a half or inch and three quarter belts. By the way, I just put two new belts on order. I ordered some Wilderness Tactical belts. I ordered two of them. One of them is the Wilderness Tactical Instructor belt, and the other is the Frequent Flyer belt. I've kind of worn out my Frequent Flyer belt, so I had to replace it. And I've always been wanting to try the Wilderness Tactical Instructor belt, Kydex lined. I ordered a couple of 511 belts, and they just weren't what I was looking for. They're not rigid enough. And I like real rigid. And one thing I like about the Wilderness Tactical is they make the Kydex lined belt with a Kydex liner on the inside of it to keep it real rigid. That's very, very important, especially when carrying a large pistol. So I'll do a review on those. But I have nothing but great things to say about my Wilderness Tactical Frequent Flyer belt. It just means it's got a plastic buckle. And maybe it's a little bit thinner than the instructor belt. I don't know. I'll find out. And it really works. I've gone through the TSA scanners many, many times with this belt on and never set them off. But the Cobra holsters are real, real good. And somebody sent me a message recently wanting to know what do I carry my G42, G43, and Shield in when I'm appendix carrying. I use Jason's ASP 2.1. ASP, ASP, Appendix Specific Platform 2.1. He's redesigned the clip, which I really like. It's an excellent clip. The clip is very stable. One thing about appendix carry, well, any kind of carry, by the way, it's very, you have to have a lot of stability. In other words, you can't have that pistol rocking back and forth and not being in the place where you expect it to be when you need it. And Jason, I got to say, the old ASP 2.0, I didn't really much care for the clip on that, and it didn't really hold the pistol too stable. But now his 2.1 and his 3.0 holsters, they have wonderful clips. So I highly recommend those. And those are hybrid. One nice thing about those for appendix carry is they have a leather inside, which your body touches leather. It doesn't touch anything else. And that's a whole lot more comfortable. I always wear an undershirt. You know, it's over 100 degrees in South Texas with the heat index right now. And I'm wearing an undershirt. I always do. I always wear these real thin, you know, tank top style t-shirts. And, you know, I'm used to it. So my gun and my holster never touch skin. And for me, that's the best way and the most comfortable way. And I would recommend if you can do that, you'd be amazed what you can carry with extreme comfort. So I use the ASP 2.1 and I use the Cobra for outside the waist, and that's pretty much been my only carry methods lately. I do want to give a huge thumbs up to the High Noon Hideaway holsters. I use that when I carry my car PM9, and I'm thinking about getting one for my Shield. Every once in a while, I have a desire to carry an all-leather holster. And if you want to carry an all-leather holster, I really recommend the High Noon Hideaway. Now, all these holsters I'm mentioning, none of these are for open carry. So if you're an open carrier, don't use these because they don't have any retention for open carry. These are concealment holsters for a concealment garment on the outside. Back in May when Ben Branham and I went up to Sioux Falls and we teamed up with Paul Lathrop from the Polite Society podcast to teach Beyond Concealed Carry, Paul had the Concealment Solutions Sidewinder Pro with retention on it for open carry. And I was real impressed by what I saw of that holster. If I ever decide to do any open carrying, I'll probably get that holster for probably a Glock 19 and open carry with that if I ever decide to do it, or a full-size M&P. But what I'm talking about are concealment holsters. The High Noon Hideaway is very good. One nice thing about the High Noon Hideaway is that it's got the mouth of the holster, the top of it, it's reinforced, and so it stays open when you draw your pistol. It stays open, so it makes it easier to reholster. That's a very important feature. Some people ask, well, why is that important? Well, think about it. What if you've used your gun to defend yourself, and okay, the fight is over, but you still need your other hand that you're not shooting with? Maybe you need that to be free. Maybe you need to grab a child. Maybe you need to, you know, redirect your spouse or somebody else that's with you. Maybe you're walking your dog or whatever, and you got your dog on a leash, and you're using... I'm a right-hander, so let's say for all you right-handers, you're using your left hand to walk your dog or something like that. And you had to use your pistol to defend yourself against either another animal or a human being, whatever. And you need to reholster one-handed. It's important to have the top of that holster that stays open after when there's no pistol in it. The other thing is, those tend to conceal real well. Those tend to hold that pistol close to your body. The only disadvantage I want to say about the High Noon holster is that it's very low riding. So if you are carrying appendix, for example, you really have to practice your draw because your fingers are going to hit your belt. Okay, they make a couple of other holsters that ride a little bit too high for me, but they do ride higher. It's one reason why I like Jason's product. And I think just for review purposes, I'm going to order Jason's Concealment Solutions ASP 3.0, which is all Kydex, because for some smaller pistols, for me, an all Kydex holster, I can get away with it, especially wearing a t-shirt underneath. Ah, so many great options, isn't there? Would you agree that it's nice to have all these great options? And guess what? By the way, folks, I wanted to tell you. I have a box full of holsters, and I like it. I like it. I got a box full of holsters. I have different holsters for different methods of carry for different situations. Don't you think that's a good thing? You know, have you ever read, like, on an internet forum or heard somebody talk about, I got this one holster that is good for everything? Really? I have found in my lifestyle, I don't know about you, but I've found in my lifestyle, one holster is not good for everything for me. I got to have different kinds of holsters depending on what I'm carrying, where I'm carrying it, and what environment I happen to be in when I am carrying. The other day, I carried my Glock 42 in Jason's ASP 2.1 appendix carry. And it was wonderful. And I had to carry that because I was in an NPE, a non-permissive environment. I was in an environment at a major hotel where I can't have them know I'm carrying. And I just didn't want to take a chance of putting a Glock 19 or an M&P 9 full size, or really any kind of a double stack pistol, on my hip. So, I mean, but yet I can't, in that little Glock 42 and Glock 43 holster, I can't carry my bigger guns. So, you know, for me, how could I have one holster that fits everything? You know, you see a lot of holster makers advertise that, too. The last holster you're ever going to need. Yeah, baloney. That's marketing, and don't believe it. But buy them, though. Buy those holsters. Just make sure that you have lots of different holsters for your carry pistols for different kinds of situations. Because the most important thing is that you're carrying a gun. That is the most important thing, is that you are carrying a gun. Yeah, and you know, I don't know what made me think of this, but I'm recording this just a couple of days after the tragedy of yet another nut job. Yet another nut job that shot that reporter in Virginia on live TV and also shot the person she was interviewing, who I understand lived, and shot the cameraman who did not live. Another nutbag, folks. It's never going to be possible. It's never going to be possible, ever, 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 by passing any law that will stop this. And already you got the pinheads out there calling for gun control again, calling for, this is the real answer, banning high-capacity magazines. Yeah, that's the answer. That's the answer, right? Yeah, this guy would not have done that if he couldn't have had access to a high-capacity magazine, right? I think the reports are saying he bought his gun legally. He bought it legally. So, more background checks? That's not going to do it. I'm pretty sure this guy passed the background check. Got the gun legally. They're saying it's a Glock 9mm. So, he probably used a Glock 19 or a Glock 17. And Glock 19s, Glock 17s are great guns for defensive purposes. And in the hands of an evil person, people will do evil things with them. But it's not the gun's fault. So, somebody please tell me, how is passing more extensive background checks, how is that going to stop this guy in Virginia from doing what he did? Shooting the reporter and the cameraman and the person being interviewed. How is limiting magazine capacity going to stop that? You know, I would love to hear an explanation. I would love to hear somebody ask these pinheads to clearly explain just exactly how laws like this would stop these nut jobs from doing what they're doing. Love to hear a good, coherent explanation on that, but what a tragedy. Pray for their families. And I hope for those two people that died that their souls are resting with God in peace. And that's all I want to say about that. And by the way, I guess I'm not going to talk about the shooting, but I want to tell you what I think it means. You know, when you say, when somebody passes away and you say, rest in peace, that means that their soul went to heaven and they are rejoicing and they are resting in the peace that comes from God. And most of you know my faith. I'm a Christian. So it's the peace that comes from being with Christ in heaven. You know, that's where rest in peace came from. That's where that phrase came from. All right, quick break and we'll get to the main topic.
England, Wales, Scotland, Australia, Canada, and 12 other industrialized and largely disarmed nations have higher violent crime rates than the U.S. This is according to a Dutch Ministry of Justice multinational survey. According to that survey, England and Australia are twice as vicious as America, with higher rates of robberies, muggings, and assaults. Switzerland, a well-armed nation, has a violent crime rate about the same as ours. Disarmed countries are dangerous countries, and America's few disarmed cities are the most dangerous in the Union. This is no coincidence. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
All right, now for the main topic. I'm going to talk about manual of arms. You know, last week, Chad from Grand Rapids, Michigan called in a voicemail, and I did not get a chance to give a complete response to his voicemail. I was in the Handgun World mobile studio. I'm back in the mobile studio right now, but I am parked. I'm at school waiting to pick my son up and give him a ride home. So this was running through my mind, and I wanted to add a couple things. Chad was the caller last week into my show that was talking about encountering a pit bull while he was running. And he talked about a few things that I want to address again. One thing he talked about was that he was going to get pistols that have all the same manual of arms. And for some of you that might not know what that term is, you know, it gets thrown around a lot. You hear a lot about, you know, got to have a certain manual of arms, or everything has to have the same manual of arms. I've used that term as well. Let me comment on Chad's voicemail first, and then I'm going to get into that. I think Chad's doing a good thing if he does get pistols that all operate the same way. And basically, that's what a manual of arms is. It's an instruction book for handling and using weapons. And I'll get into that in a little bit more detail. The reason I'm a big believer in that is because, look, when something bad happens and somebody wants to hurt you or kill you badly, it's going to be a real fast and real nasty event. But it's going to happen quickly. I've said this many times. You don't want to be switching back and forth between different platforms all the time, because split seconds count, in my opinion. Now, this is my opinion, but I don't think you want to be fumbling around with trying to think, okay, let's see, what do I have now? Do I have my 1911? Oh yeah, I got to depress that thumb safety. Oh, wait a minute, no, I got my SIG. Okay, so that's going to be a little bit different. No, well, maybe I don't have my SIG. Maybe I got my Beretta 92FS. And, oh, that's right, I got to push up on the safety instead of pushing down on the safety. You see what I mean? You don't want to have to start thinking about all that stuff when bad stuff goes down. I mean, this could all be over in 2 or 3 seconds. Chad described his encounter with that dog as about an 8 to 10 second encounter. Folks, you may not have 8 to 10 seconds to react. The other thing I want to say about Chad's voicemail, and by the way, he wanted me to go ahead and reprimand him if I felt like it. Like I said last week, no reprimands from me. That's not my place. I don't operate that way.
I'm not an expert. Okay? I'm not going to be reprimanding anybody. Besides that, you don't get your point across very effectively, in my opinion, if you reprimand. You know, we're not dealing with kids here. I'm not trying to discipline a child by reprimand. I'm just trying to throw some ideas out about Chad's experience because he was nice enough to share his personal experience with us. He talked about whether he didn't know if he had a round in the chamber or not. Ladies and gentlemen, always, always, always carry a round in the chamber. In my opinion, a gun without a round in the chamber is an unloaded gun. Would you agree? It's an unloaded gun. Don't take the chance that you're going to have time or that you're going to have the hands available to rack a round in the chamber if you're using a semi-automatic pistol. This doesn't apply, obviously, if you're using a revolver, but you may not have the use of all of both of your hands. And have you trained on manipulating a gun one-handed? Have you trained on chambering a round with one hand? Have you trained on how to clear a malfunction with one hand? Both of those are entirely possible, but it's got to be habit. It's got to be a reflex response. It's got to be second nature. It can't be something that you have to think about. Preferably, you should be able to do anything with one hand. Okay, so, you know, carry a round in the chamber. If you don't feel comfortable carrying a round in the chamber of your defensive handgun that you're going to carry to bet your life on, may I strongly suggest you get some good training so that you know what you're doing, so that you're confident in your ability. Please. That all that is a training issue. If you don't feel comfortable carrying around in the chamber, then you don't have good enough gun manipulation and gun handling and safety training. That's my opinion, and I'm sticking to that. Because folks, that's vital. The other thing that Chad talked about was, you know, he wasn't sure. No, excuse me, it was the warning shots. Yeah, he talked about, well, if the dog came out, if the pit bull came out, he would fire a warning shot. You know, folks, don't do that. Don't do that. No warning shots, not even in front of animals. Okay? Chad said he was going to fire a warning shot into the dirt in front of the dog. Don't do that. What if there's a rock in the dirt and your bullet ricochets off the rock? You have no idea where that's going to go. Unless you are 100% sure that it is impossible for that bullet to end up where you don't want it to end up. Do not, in fact, don't ever fire a warning shot. Rule of thumb, practice, don't, a rule of practice or a rule of engagement, excuse me, that's what I meant to say, don't fire warning shots. I don't care if it's an animal you're trying to defend yourself against or a human being or what it is. If you're going to press the trigger on your gun, it better be at a bad guy or a bad animal. And it better be to stop, to hit and stop that bad guy or that animal. Okay? There could be a rock. There could be just about anything. And don't for a minute assume, or don't for a second assume that that bullet's going to lodge itself in the dirt. You never know where that's going to end up. So, those are some things that I want to say about Chad's engagement. However, Chad, thank you very much for calling that in. Folks, I don't want you guys to feel embarrassed about calling in your experiences when you're carrying, or even if you're not carrying, your experiences with firearms. I welcome your response. By the way, my voicemail number, just in case you don't have it, 210-646-1727. 210-646-1727. Again, it's not a reprimand. I'm just making some very strong suggestions. Okay, let me explain manual of arms. This is something that I don't know if you know this or not, but let me share with you kind of what the definition of a manual of arms is. A manual of arms was an instruction book for handling and using weapons in formation, whether in the field or on parade. Such manuals were important in the matchlock and flintlock eras. Now, that's interesting. I didn't know that. When loading and firing was a complex and lengthy process typically carried out in close order. The term has reference to one of several important manuals, such as the British Army Manual of 1764 and the Manual of Frederick the Great, or von Steuben's Regulations for the Order and Discipline of the Troops of the United States, adopted by the Continental Army in 1777. Interesting stuff. I was always wondering where that came from. I figured it had to do with history, but I didn't realize that it went that far back in history. Now, here's some interesting stuff. This is kind of cool. This is from the 1764 Manual of Arms of the American Revolution. I think you're going to get a chuckle out of this. Stance. Stand straight, head right, shoulders square, stomach in, chest out, heels close, toes turned out a little. Holding the weapon on the left shoulder, forefinger and thumb to the side of the stock, the other three holding the butt. Timing, each motion to be done on a count of 1, 2. So I think Ben Branham and I just now have some new material that we're going to teach regarding stance in our training classes. I don't know. Do you get a chuckle out of that? I do. It just kind of sounds a little funny going back to the American Revolution days. Actually, this was written in 1764, before the American Revolution. I love that first one. Stance. Stand straight. Head right. Shoulders square. Stomach in. Oh, that's important. Got to get that stomach in, right? That's really important. Get that stomach in and chest out. Heels close. Toes turned out a little. That's good stuff there. Such manuals contain various evolutions, such as the 12 or so steps needed to load. How about that? 12 steps needed to load, ready, and fire, and steps for fixing bayonets. Cool stuff, huh? Anyway, that's where Manual of Arms comes from, or at least that's where the term comes from, or probably at least the major piece of history where that came from. But I'm a firm believer in the operational consistency of your defensive handguns. Because, and you know, you could say that a Glock and a Smith & Wesson M&P, for example, have the same manual of arms. I mean, pretty close. You know, these days, in modern day, there's not much difference operationally between a Glock or an M&P or even an XD. You know, but, you know, when you start throwing in things like thumb safeties and grip safeties and decockers and safety up to fire or safety down to fire, meaning a thumb safety, you know, I'm a firm believer you could experience issues if split seconds count. Same thing with long guns. You know, if you're used to the operational methods of an AR-15 and how that safety works, and how to chamber around, how to use the charging handle chamber around, you know, even if you're going to use the forward assist, that's a lot different than, for example, an AK. Okay? AK's got a different, even a different way of reloading magazines, completely different way of reloading magazines that can be so different that if split seconds count, these are going to slow you down. So I'm a huge believer in that, and I would suggest that you think about that when you're thinking about what you're going to carry. Now, if you want to have different manual of arms or different operational methods for your range toys or your competition guns, gamer guns, what have you, hey, that's fine. You know, I hear about all these IDPA five-gun master shooters or five-gun expert shooters. That means in five different categories, in five different classifications, they're a master shooter. And to me, that's terrific. I mean, that's awesome. God bless you. If you can be a master class or even an expert class competition shooter in five different categories, wow. I mean, that's huge. And for those of you that don't know, there's actually six categories now, if I'm not mistaken. There's stock service pistol, enhanced service pistol, custom defensive service pistol. let's see. What am I missing? SSP? ESP? CDP? Stock service revolver, enhanced service revolver, that's 5, and then I think there's backup gun. Did I get that right? If I got that wrong, let me know. Send me an email, bob@handgunworld.com. Call in a voicemail, 210-646-1727. But I'm pretty sure those are the 6 divisions of IDPA, for example. Stock service pistol, enhanced service pistol, custom defensive pistol, stock service revolver, enhanced service revolver, and backup gun. Anyway, so that's 6. Anyway, if you can master those, wow, that's great. But I don't think you want to rotate and carry all 6 of those, or even really 2 or 3 of those. Pick the type you're going to carry. If you love 1911s and you're good with it, stick with 1911s. If you like modern striker-fired weapons like I do, stick with modern striker-fired weapons. If you like double-action, single-action weapons, like most likely SIGs, Berettas, and FNs, stick with those. You know, if you love revolvers, stick with revolvers as your carry handgun. Just my personal opinion. I think the other benefit of sticking with guns on the same platform or the same manual of arms, you got to think about things like replacement parts. You have to think about things like taking parts out of one gun and putting them in another. You know, that's one thing I like about Glocks and M&Ps and even the XD line. Especially Glocks and M&Ps. I can pull a part out of a Glock 19 and I can put it into a Glock 26. Everything except the slide and the barrel, of course. Most of the parts are interchangeable. I can take it out of a 19 and put it into a 17 or a 34. I can take a part off of my M&P 9 full size. And, you know, I could drop that into an M&P 9 compact, for example. I couldn't put it into a shield. I couldn't always put it into a shield 9mm. And that's one of the disadvantages of the little single-stack Glocks, by the way, the Glock 43s and Glock 42s. All right, can't take full-size Glocks and put those parts into the G42s and G43s, not all of them at least. But it is nice, and of course the interchangeability of magazines, and of course the interchangeability of holsters, another good reason to have guns of similar type when you're concealed carrying. If you buy a holster for a Glock 19, for example, you can carry your Glock 26 in it. Or if you buy one for a Glock 17, you can carry your 17 or your 19 or your 26 in it. Depending on how the holster is manufactured, you can carry a Glock 34 or a 35. You know, M&P line, XD line, kind of the same deal. So that's pretty much the main topic. I know this main topic segment is kind of short, but I like to keep things short, sweet, explanatory to where I'm not rambling on and on. I make the point, and if I think of some things later on after I get done, I'll throw them into the next episode. Now, I'd like to get to a voicemail. Mexican Joe called in a voicemail about XD pistols, and I think this is worth you hearing and me making a comment. Here we go.
Hey, Bob, Mexican Joe, North Detective. Hey, I'm calling about episode 329 of your Shooter podcast. The Springfield X's are awesome pistols. All the Springfield guns I have found to be really superior quality. The hard cases, magazines, their own mag pouches. I'm not a big fan of the mag pouches, but hey, they come for free, so you do take them and use them. The one nine-millimeter that I'm impressed with is the XD9 subcompact mod 2. Now, I prefer it with the longer magazine because with the short magazine, I can't get my pinky on it, and I'm just having a problem with more mental on dealing with the control of it. But it is a double stack, so it will not work for your test because it's a double stack. But double stack, subcompact, and it's running 16-1. And Springfield's got this little mag extender that kind of buffers between the bottom of the mag and the mag belt, the pistol grip. But the XDS, I know that me and Super Dave, neither one of us were really impressed with the XDS with that. We call it a cheese grade grip. Some people like it, we don't. The Mod 2 has a grip zone style pistol grip. It is awesome. If you get a chance, you and all your listeners, check out the HD Subcompact Mod 2 with the grip zone. It's superior hand feel to it. It's got a little thumb retention for it. It's just, it's an awesome shooting gun. Another thing you mentioned, that the Springfields were heavy. In a subcompact, you want that. You want that front end weight to help you control the weapon. A little more weight on the short subcompact, we think, is a plus. So anyway, that's just my 2 cents worth of brass. Thanks much. Thanks for all you do. And shoot safe.
So Joe talks about the Mod 2 line of the XD pistols. You know, I haven't had a chance to play around with them, but I have heard nothing but great things about the XD Mod 2s and their grip zone. You know, I happen to like, by the way, the grips on the XDMs and the XDS. Mexican Joe called it in and called it a cheese grater grip. I like it. I like it. To me, it's not too rough, especially when I'm shooting the gun. I gotta say, that's one thing I really like about the XDM and the XDS line of pistols, is the grip texture. I like it. I can hold on to that gun, especially if it's hot outside and I'm sweating like crazy. I don't know about you. What do you think? Those of you that own XDs, what do you think of the grip texture on the XD series of pistols, specifically the XDMs and the XDSs? Now, the Mod 2s don't have quite as aggressive texture as the XDMs and XDSs. And it's a pretty comfortable grip. Yeah, it's a double stack gun, and I've been, you know, testing out and experimenting with single stack guns lately, but there's no question. Springfield makes a fine line of guns in their XD series. And of course, I mean, the 1911s that they've been making for years and years. One of the things I like about it, a Springfield 1911s, all Springfield 1911s are basically the Series 70 format, meaning they're not going to have that firing pin safety garbage and junk that I don't think that you need to have in a 1911 anymore. That's old school. You know, those Series 80, there's not a need for that anymore. Springfield, I'm pretty sure because they use titanium firing pins, it evens out the weight distribution of the firing pin. And if you drop that gun, there's very, very, very little likelihood that it's going to go off. That used to be an issue. If you dropped a 1911 a certain way and it hit the ground a certain way, you might have an accidental discharge. Not much of an issue anymore. I don't like those lawyer satisfying features or court satisfying features of sticking all those stupid firing pin safeties and all that stuff in there. I like the fact that most of Springfield's 1911s have more of that traditional design, at least in the upper of the pistol. So, Joe, thanks for calling that in and bringing up the XD Mod 2. All right, let's just take a quick break and next segment.
Good afternoon. This is your captain speaking with just a little flight information. Coming up on the left, we're going to be catching a glimpse of the Grand Canyon. On the right, you can be able to see the Hoover Dam in just a few minutes. We're flying at an altitude of 37,000 feet, and our airspeed is 400 miles an hour. Couple little facts here. I'm packing a Colt King Cobra. That's a 357 caliber firearm with a black rubber grip and a 6-inch barrel. Also, the co-pilot is carrying a Kimber custom defense pistol with all the bells and whistles you'd expect from a custom gun of that kind, with an alloy frame and bevel treatment on the entire gun. And our chief flight attendant, Roger, has a Ruger Bearcat 22 with a hand-fluted cylinder. All three are capable of piercing body armor at a distance of up to 27 feet, and it can put a hole in human bone and flesh the size of the Grand Canyon, which, by the way, is coming up on the left-hand side of the plane, so just sit back and relax and enjoy the rest of the flight.
Hey, Bob, good evening. My name is Luis, and I'm calling you from Miami, Florida, with a quick question. I do have a concealed carry permit here from the state of Florida, but I'm actually moving to Dallas next month. My quick question is, can I use my permit from Florida to go and buy a firearm at a gun store using my Florida permit without a waiting period. Since I know there is reciprocity, but I'm not sure if the reciprocity is just to carry, or can I use that also to go and buy a firearm without a waiting period? If I have to wait, I wait, though, not big deal. But anyways, thanks for your podcast. Very, very nice. And hopefully I'll try with you sooner than later. All right. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
All right. To that caller, thanks again for calling in. I think he might be the first caller that I've ever had from the Miami area. Forgive me if I'm wrong about that, but I think so. Anyway, sir, the answer is no. You cannot buy a handgun here in Texas with a Florida concealed carry license. I doubt that I'm wrong on that, and if I'm wrong, somebody who's in the gun selling business here in Texas set me straight. But the answer is no. Now, with a Texas CHL license, you can buy a gun here. And this question is specifically, can he buy a gun without the NICS background check? I'm pretty sure that's what he's asking. And see, in Texas here, we have a system, and there's other states with this too. If you have a concealed handgun license in Texas, the gun store can skip the background check because they've already done enough background checks on you to give you your CHL. You're a good guy. You're a certified card-carrying good guy or good gal if you have a concealed handgun license. There are other states like that, too. But I don't think you can do that with a Florida license. As a matter of fact, you've got to be a Texas resident. And you've got to have a Texas state ID or a Texas driver's license to buy a firearm in Texas. A handgun. Long guns, it doesn't apply to long guns. It applies to handguns. So thank you for calling in, sir, but I believe the answer is no. Now, what you can do is if you come to Texas and you see a handgun you like, or if you go to any state in the country and you see a handgun you like, I shouldn't say any state, but most of the free states, and you see a handgun you like, you can buy it, you can pay for it, and the dealer selling that, excuse me, the dealer selling that gun is going to have to ship it to a federal firearms license dealer in your state. And then you're going to have to go to the FFL in your state and fill out the federal 4473 form and pay him or her the transfer fee, and then you can take home your gun. So, you know, if you see some kind of special deal or special firearm in another state, you can do it that way. Well, all right, that'll do it for this episode. Thanks again very much to Joe for calling in that email or that voicemail, for calling in the voicemail about the XD Mod 2. The next time I get over to a gun shop, I'm going to try to handle one of those even more extensively. I don't think I want to buy one of those, but maybe I'll get a chance to borrow one someday. I'm not sure, but I would love to put that gun through the paces as well. With that said, folks, I'm Bob Main. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Handgun World podcast. Don't forget to support me. I don't have paid sponsors on this show for a reason. I don't want you to hear a bunch of commercials, but you could sign up for one of the classes that I'm teaching. You could become a member of the Shooters Club and win a holster on December 1st from On Your Six Designs, another good holster maker. Ben and I are giving away holsters to five winners. You can make sure that you make your Amazon purchases using my Amazon store. If you go to handgunworld.com, you'll find the Amazon store page, and you can make all your Amazon purchases through my store. Even if you have an Amazon Prime account, you know, go through my link first, then sign into your account. And you can also support the show by spreading the word, getting more people to listen, getting them involved. Send people links to my show. Talk about something that you learned on it. Tell them how to find it on iTunes or on Stitcher Radio or whatever else you use. Have them listen. Just tell them, hey, you know, this is a common sense guy. He doesn't ramble. And he just, you know, keeps things common sense and practical and hard-hitting. Okay, folks, thanks again. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. And remember, don't hear one of those loud sounds. Don't hear a click when you're expecting a bang or, ooh, this would be bad, a bang when you're only expecting a click. Shoot straight, shoot safe, and I'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.